Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Everybody, I'm one of your hosts, John Miscavige.
And I am one half of your other hosts, Matt Koplik.
We are laughing just because we are, for seemingly the first time in forever, applicable reference. We're in the same room recording. Hi, Matt.
Hi, John. How are ya?
I'm doing really well. We're also laughing because GarageBand, the very highbrow recording program that we use, does this little metronome thingy before you hit record. And normally when Matt and I hit record, it's over Skype, and we just count down. We go 3, 2, 1, and then we both hit it.
And, like, our headphones
And our headphones are in, so we can't hear it. But we just had this, like, weird, like, jam out, like, bump, ba-bump, 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 leading up to us recording. So that's why we're Giggle Fest.
It's a great day to be alive.
It is. It's raining and gloomy and so fucking humid, but there's so many amazing things to talk about.
Yeah. Well, so, okay. We planned originally to record the week before the Tony Awards.
I'm sorry, everybody.
No, there's no blame
except it's my fault.
Your gay stomach is what.
No,
So John was out of town, and we made a plan.
We did.
We made a plan to record.
It was in the calendar.
It was like in the calendar and everything. And the day before, John's like, "Okay, like, can we actually move it to tomorrow? Because I'm at my parents, and like things are going down." Sure.
Yeah.
And then like that morning. No, was it that
night? That night.
John texted me. He's like, "Do not hate me. I've been throwing up for like 6 hours straight."
Everything. I threw up everything I ever ate. Yeah, it was... I'm not one to get sick a lot. Like, if there's one thing, you know, I might have a lot of issues with anxiety, certain bouts with seasonal affective disorder. Like, I definitely have my fair share of health problems.
Absolutely.
But if there's one thing that I don't do a lot, it's I don't get nauseous, like, to the point of vomiting a lot. And I just, last week, it all just hit me. And then I was like, I think I'm okay. The next day I woke up and I was not okay. And the next day I woke up and I was like, I'm okay. And the next day I woke up and I was like, I'm not okay. But then I was okay for a little bit. And then 4:30 p.m. hit. And I've never in my adult life gotten to the point where I literally, like, Charlie Brown style, walked over to the bed in like a slumped motion, and I just fell like face first at 4:30 p.m. and could not move for hours. Like, oh, yeah. Couldn't move for hours. I was out for the count.
That was me back in December. I don't know, I got something one day. Like, I remember waking up and getting like myself ready to go to work, and something just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I
broke. Like, it's that moment.
Something just broke.
Like, yeah, literally.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, shit.
And, like, both ends, babe.
Yeah,
and
I was worried about that with this one. I'm sorry.
Like, I remember living on my bathroom floor all day long, and, like, would brave my way back to the bed, and then, like, 5 minutes later, back to, like, for 24 hours straight.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I just slept all day long. But that is also how I got to watch Marvelous Mrs. Maisel in a full day.
Which I haven't started yet.
You
because
absolutely
Because I have such a long list of things I need to start, but, and I have this really awful problem where I just love the shows that I love so much, and I just love rewatching Arrested Development. I love rewatching Parks and Rec. I love rewatching 30 Rock. I just rewatched All of Broad City again, because it's I'm so sad that it's
coming to an end,
but I'm glad that they're closing it on a high note.
Exactly.
But closing it, like, they put in their 4 weeks notice. But Matt and I were just kind of discussing before we hit record that I just started 2 nights ago this little ditty that people have been telling me to watch for years now, called The Good Place, and I am hooked.
As well you should be.
I am. I love it.
Okay, so, yeah, we were literally just discussing this because I had mentioned to John that how happy I am that Younger is back with a certain unknown Broadway talent called Sutton Fuster.
Sutton Fuster, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It is, the way that I describe younger is that it's like artisanal cotton candy. It is such fluff, but it is specifically made, like, cannot get it anywhere else kind of fluff. It is real.
I've heard it's great. I feel like I would really like
it. Yeah, you have to take it for what it is. Like, there are episodes where they try to make it about ageism and, like, and it doesn't work. They're like, oh, we're gonna have a serious talk about ageism. It's like,
yeah.
You're not at all. But it just, oh God, it's so delicious. That's the best word to describe younger. It's delicious. Well, the good place, though, it disguises itself as cotton candy. It is a full-on filet mignon.
It's brilliant.
It is.
Ted Danson is a comedic genius.
He really is. And Kristen Bell is great.
Kristen Bell is amazing.
And you're still on season one.
Yes.
Has anyone spoiled the first season finale?
No.
Okay.
I've actually been very... The twists and turns have got me. I thought this seems pretty cookie cutter, and not cookie cutter in like a bad way, but I didn't expect to be as shocked. There, an episode ends and it's a cliffhanger, and you're taken aback. I stopped last night and another cliffhanger, and it was so late and I was so tired. I wanted to watch more, but I didn't. But I can't wait to. I love
it. It's literally like if Breaking Bad and Parks and Rec had a baby.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
So, there's that. I feel like I guess we should talk about the big elephant in the room.
What does my ass have to do with this podcast, John?
Well, because your ass was at the Tony!
Oh my God. They was at the Tonys,
was
y'all.
This your first time?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, because that was the whole big deal.
It hurt a little bit.
But then it feels really good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I grabbed as much olive oil as I could, and it just went for it.
You should try coconut oil next time.
Next time. Or, like, go to the Last Tango in Paris where you get some butter. Butter. I was a guest at the Tony Awards. I want to make it very clear. I did not purchase a ticket. Not that I looked down on people who purchased tickets. I could not afford one of those tickets. Those things were like $1,000.
No.
Yeah. Which is
really?
You would think that if you weren't, say, like a member of the producing team or creative team or whatever, like any muggles that came into the Tonys were going to seem like muggles. Everyone is in a tux or a suit or a gorgeous gown because those people can afford it.
Ooh.
Those tickets were 4 digits.
Ooh.
No, thank you. So I did not purchase tickets simply because bitch has rent to pay.
Yeah, that's a Hamilton of money.
Did you just come up with that?
I did, and I'm regretful, but I'm proud. Which is much of my life.
I was going to say, every time I go out, honestly, that was me the night of your birthday. Afterwards, I was regretful, but so proud, which we should talk on that.
But we should talk about that.
John had a birthday extravaganza.
So fun! I love being born.
I don't think I did not intend to be out as late as I was that night. I stayed out later for your birthday than I did at the Tonys. And I went to the after party for the Tonys at the Plaza.
We stayed out pretty late. I mean, but the thing is, too, is like, we stayed out late in only the way that you and I would stay out late. We missed one of my best friend's drag show. She co-hosts Broadway Mondays at Hardware Bar, Suddenly Seymour.
I was able to be there for the last 30 minutes.
All right.
And,
because
you would not have gotten there when you did if I didn't text you. So I left.
Know.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Well, sorry, guys. We're all over the place. It's like Memento.
Memento.
John had a birthday, and the way that my celebration with him started was he did an Escape the Room.
Yeah, we did an Escape the Room in a theater. It was set in a theater.
It was very meta.
It was
the theater
super
was with puppets.
Oh my God.
It was very scary.
It was puppets. They were like kind of doing Les Mis. Like it really was almost too much on brand for me.
Absolutely. Well, so the best part was you had a friend. So we're sitting there for, I had never done Escape the Room before. So I was already very nervous.
So much fun.
It was a lot of fun. And we won, by the way.
Yes, we dominated. They thought we were going to break the record.
Yeah, we were like 3 or 4 minutes away from breaking the record. It was really good. But we're sitting there, like, there are puppets hanging all over the place. And one of the employees always, I guess, has to sort of explain to you how things go. And the way he introduced the room was like, and the puppets have a message. And one of John's friends let out from his gut.
Nope. Who was it? I don't even remember.
I don't know.
Jeremiah.
I think it was Jeremiah.
Jeremiah.
And as they were like explaining how you had to get out of the room and the puppets were gonna like speak to you from beyond,
yeah, I was like, it was getting creepy.
I was like, this is the plot of Saw right now. Yeah. We were in the plot of Saw. It was terrifying. But we did win. We did. But so we then moved on from there to a bar, which, what was the name of it again?
Tenor Smith's.
Okay.
Very, very lovely bar.
Yes, in Midtown. And I, every time I passed by it, I didn't know that that was the name.
Oh, you've never been before?
Well, I passed by it, and it says bar outside, so I just thought it was bar. No. I thought it was set like a...
That does seem like a very much, like, Hell's Kitchen-ish name of a bar.
Yeah.
Bar.
Bar.
Like Bacon Bar. Like, what the fuck do you think happens at Bacon Bar? It's a bar that has bacon. Like, that... There's your answer, kids. So,
well, it's like what happens at the International House of Pancakes, burgers.
Yeah, exactly.
you know about that, right?
Or it happens at industry.
Wait, you know that about, right? What? IHOP and IHOB?
No.
Oh, so that joke just did not land for you. International House of Pancakes changed their name to International House of Burgers.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Like the other day. And now everyone's like, excuse you. That's not, no. So Burger King right now is Pancake King because they're trolling IHOP. So John,
it takes a lot to like really befuddle me, and this has really befuddled me.
Anywho,
okay.
We get there, yes, and Sutton Seymour's show is at 10 at this gay bar called Hardware, and I've gone a couple of times before I really even knew John, and like always loved it. And we were the plan was to go to Tanner Smith's and then to Sutton Seymour, and it gets to be like 10 o'clock, and no one's budging, and then it gets to be about 10:20, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go. And I went with my boyfriend, Adam, and we got there thinking like, okay, like John and everyone will show up later. It gets to be at 11 o'clock, and Sutton makes this announcement like, I think we have a special guest in the house.
Oh, no! Goes, I haven't heard this part of the story fully yet.
And you had another friend who was there as well. I forget who it was. But he was there with his boyfriend, and Sutton starts looking around like, is the birthday boy here? Is John here? And your friend wouldn't say anything, so I was like, oh, he's not here yet. And Sutton just goes, that cunt. And I text John and go, Sutton just called you a cunt on stage in front of 150 people.
Yep.
And John's like, oh my God, run away. So John was able to show up like the minute after
it
ended.
The minute it ended.
It was...
In my defense...
Go for it.
I love Sutton Lee so much. I'm going to call you out, but this is like the first time you've probably ever started a show on time. So, there's that.
Does Sutton listen to this?
Probably. I don't know. If you don't, you should.
Oh, my God.
Because now you're being dragged through the mud. No, you're not being dragged through the mud. I love her so much.
But she's so good.
And also, the show normally can sometimes go until midnight. And so, I definitely showed up before midnight.
Yes.
And in my also defense, people just kept showing up at this restaurant bar. And so, every time I was trying to, like, gather friends to leave... people kept showing up, and that is not me just saying, you know, making an excuse to sound like, oh, I'm so popular. Everyone just kept showing up, but I'm so popular and everyone just kept showing up. La, 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 you'll be popular, just not quite as popular
as me. So, yeah, John gets there and with a couple other people, and we were there for, like, better part of 2 hours, I want to say, from, like, almost...
We were there for a while.
Yeah, up until, like, 2 a.m. And
With one of my dear friends who Matt met for the first time. I don't know if she listened to this. Hi, Deborah, if you do listen to
Deborah.
It. Her name is Deborah Craig. She is the original Marcy Parks in Spelling Bee. She is one of my favorite people in the whole wide world.
She's a trip.
She is a trip. Matt got to experience her. And we just, like, sat around Hardware Bar because they were still playing music videos, whether the Tonys or TV show performances or bootlegs. Mm-hmm. And so we were just watching these music videos of Chess with the most teased out hair.
Or remember when they did All I Ask of You on a beach?
All I Ask of You on a green screen beach. It was so weird. Sarah Brightman in front of a green screen in a weird flowy like beach dress singing All I Ask of You. It's so weird.
I do imagine that's what the real Good Place looks like.
Probably. Oh my God.
But so yeah, I got to meet her. I didn't, and John didn't tell me who she was. And no one said her full name to me. Just, this is Deborah.
Yeah.
And she's a trip. She and I bonded. She and I bonded over Sally Murphy, which, like, I thought no one would ever.
She was offended that you didn't think that she would know who Sally Murphy was.
Because most people don't.
The thing about Deborah is that when you think you're a theater bunny and you're kind of embarrassed about it, she will throw out something and you just you realize, oh, you are my kind of people.
Yeah.
Well, she's a theater bunny as well.
Because we ended up talking about Carousel, which is like, if you ever want me to just like steamroll you in a conversation and mention Carousel. And we did. We talked about it and I brought up Sally Murphy and why her performance worked. And I was like, so, you know, this actress, Sally Murphy, and she shouts at me, you don't think I know who Sally Murphy is?
She screamed it.
Yeah. And then we ended up being outside the bar for a while. And there was
For a long while.
It was supposed to be like a 5-minute goodbye. An hour later, we're still there. And then after John left, Deborah, Adam, and then your other friend, the one who's in Sweeney, Matt.
Yes, Matt.
But the four of us were like walking up 9th. And then
Matt. I think he listens to this.
Matt. The four of us stood on the corner of like 50th and 9th for another 45 minutes. And Deborah started this thing that I love now, where like if people accost you on the street to like ask, you know, for money, or like this girl came up to us.
Waste a girl.
Yeah. Came up to us being like, oh, I'm so nervous. These tourists are in there getting scammed. And Deborah was just like, not today.
But then kept saying not today.
Not today. And I started using that because I like came up with this random backstory for us so she could stop bothering us.
Yeah, Matt did come up with a very quick, elaborate lie. It was very interesting.
It was. I said we were from Ohio. And
oh, yeah. Tourists. Yeah.
It was a great day. But then John texts me as he leaves and goes, by the way, Deborah's the original Marcy Park from Spelling Bee. And I text back like, how dare you? I can't talk to her now. That's important to me. So I like didn't know how to act.
She's wonderful. She's wonderful.
I was very pleased.
You can also watch her on multiple TV shows. She was on The Blacklist for a while. She was
she's a talented bitch.
Yeah, she's super talented. So we just naturally transitioned together. We don't need a
let's talk about the Tonys for a quick second. Yes. Both my experience and your experience from home. I'm doing that thing, a little shoulder shimmy.
He is, because he's so bougie, because he went to the fucking Tonys.
And I got to go to the after party and had finger food. I waited online for lobster rolls with Tony Kushner, and I wanted to say something, but I couldn't.
I wouldn't know what to say.
What were some of your highlights watching them, John? Because I had some from the audience.
I mean, it's no surprise if you have ever read anything I've ever posted on social media
or listened to this podcast once, or merely
a nanosecond you've only listened to it, that I'm a huge Katrina Lenk fan. And so her performance was tops for me. She, out of all, I don't, like, no Tino Shade, no Pink Lemonade, for the most part, I kind of felt like a lot of people were really nervous performing on the Tonys this year. Did you feel that?
You know what it actually more felt like? It more felt rushed than anything.
Yeah, there was something kind of off.
I think it, no tea, no shade, no pink lemonade. I was very disappointed with a lot of the choices and presentations of the performances.
Yeah.
I could understand a lot of the performers being nervous, you know, it's national TV and whatnot. But at the same time, it was so clear, only really Band's Visit and kind of Once on This Island made it a point to, like, show the show that they had in like the settings that they could to make their actors comfortable.
Well, and those were my two favorite performances.
Yeah, they absolutely worked the best. Yeah. I, having seen My Fair Lady like the night before the Tony Awards, I was very taken with it. I thought it was I mean,
she sounded amazing.
She is absolutely lovely in the
show.
She
sounds amazing.
She does. Yeah. I am of the mind frame that medleys don't work. I do not like medleys. Yeah. I think they always come off rushed, and I don't think you ever truly show off your show well enough. I would have been super happy if they had done a 30-second Rain in Spain leading into all of I Could Have Danced All Night. I thought that would have been perfection.
I think so, too.
And it would have, again, like, considering how sped up the tempo was and the cut, she did fine, but she really would have, like, Katrina Lenked it if she was able to sort of breathe in the whole number.
Yeah.
A lot, like, Mean Girls, I thought their number was very underwhelming when I saw it in the theater. But yeah, Katrina Lenk, definitely the best performance of the night for me, and it's because they, like, just, they Ring of Keys it. They did a slice of the show.
Exactly.
And just let it breathe.
Exactly. I loved Lindsay Mendez's speech.
She gave a great speech.
And I loved her. I think we called, for the most part, like, a good amount of the winners, didn't we?
We didn't do a lot of predictions because our last podcast.
In my mind, I did.
Our last episode was 2 weeks before the Tony. So I think.
Yeah, but didn't we talk a lot about
a little bit? Yeah, we talked about like the main stuff we expected to win. Mm. There were a couple of surprises for me. None of the surprises were bad ones, though.
Yes.
I did not expect Tony Shalhoub or Ariel Stachel to win.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled that they did.
Same.
I can honestly say that Best Actor in a Musical, having seen all four. Almost, I would have been thrilled with either Tony, Ethan Slater, or Henry Hayden Patton, who did a lovely job as Henry Higgins. But yeah. I'm also so happy.
I will interject super quickly.
Go for it.
You know, because a lot of people, if you can believe it, on social media have been saying that they don't believe that Tony Shalhoub should have won. Because, you know, he doesn't really sing a lot in the show, and he's kind of an understated leading man. But I have a couple of friends who... When Tony was away filming, I think, the second season of Marvelous Miss mm-hmm. Maisel, Mrs. Maisel? Miss
yeah,
Maisel? Mrs. Maisel. Who saw Band's Visit again and saw the man who took over. And they all unanimously said the same thing, that you really don't realize the breadth and the depth of the work that Tony Shalhoub brings to that show until he is not there. It's one of those things of he is so completely understated and simple in the most complex of ways that I can see a lot of people being quote-unquote underwhelmed by his performance. Me, I was not one of them. I was very much tapped into the idea of this man is... doing work on a higher level that like I can't comprehend.
I would like to take this moment to do a little PSA on behalf of Tony Shalhoub and everyone from the Band's Visit, which I adored. As
I did as
you.
Well. Yes.
If you can't see the work, they're doing it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
People are like people who. Defended Ethan Slater over Tony Shalhoub, and I do not like apples
right.
and oranges.
Apples and oranges.
I will say,
exactly.
My love of Ethan Slater's performance is because I felt he still gave a very natural performance despite all the obstacles physically that he had to do.
Yeah.
But people going, Ethan Slater hung upside down while singing, and Ethan Slater, you know, bent over backwards for a show. I was like, that's not what makes a best performance.
Right.
It's wonderful. It's what makes most performance, but that's the same thing that people had a problem with Leonardo DiCaprio winning for The Revenant. Was yeah. like him eating raw salmon is not best acting. It's him eating raw salmon.
Yeah.
So this is not meant to be to your shade to Ethan Slater, who again, as I
no,
said,
right.
wonderful and would have been happy to have him win too. Tony Shalhoub winning was because it was such a wonderful performance, so integral to that show,
mm-hmm.
and you couldn't see the mechanics of it.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt organic.
Yeah, it did. It completely did. And yeah. it was beautiful. Yeah, I was so happy for Ariel Stachel as well.
Stachel? I call him Stachel. I'm sorry.
Stachel? I don't know.
I actually met him and I made it a point to not say his full name to his face.
Oh, yeah, no, I wouldn't have. I would have been like, hey.
I was like, congrats, you.
I would have been like, you, man, you big house of a man.
Yes.
Living.
Yeah, I'm like... What was it that you wrote when he won? You were like, the only thing...
Oh, that was one of the most tame things that I wrote that night. But it was the only thing sexier than Ariel Stachel is Ariel Stachel with a well-deserved Tony, which I stand by because
absolutely.
He is just... Oh. I mean, I remember seeing the Band's Visit and just being like, oh my goodness, I need to jump into that sand dune. That was weird. I don't know.
That thingy. We're all exhausted. I just love it when he goes, my funny valley.
I know.
Huet.
Oh my God.
Was huet.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. There are two wins that I was underwhelmed by, but I also expected them to happen.
And is it Andrew Garfield?
No, I'm happy with him winning.
I am as well. Some people have like sought me out to say, are you frustrated by it? And I just saw Angels in America last week. A week ago, I did a marathon day of it.
Yes, I do know that.
And I loved it. Mm-hmm. And I truly, although I was watching the show and there were moments where I had the thought, I wish this were a gay man playing this role. I think he truly did an amazing performance.
Yeah, no, Andrew Garfield did great. I think we talked about it before.
Like, yes, we did.
Yeah, it's one of those roles
yeah.
where having an actual gay man play it, there's something added to it that that really works. And it's not all gay roles. It's specifically Pryor.
Yeah.
And I think it's because Pryor was written for and tailored to Steven Spinella back in the day. So it's just, that's who he is. It's in his DNA. But no, Andrew Garfield was great. I had no problem with him winning.
What were the wins then?
There were the carousel wins. I'm happy Lindsay Mendez won only because I thought she gave a lovely speech and I think she is so talented.
Yeah.
But I've seen her give better performances with worse material.
Yes.
I personally felt she was just very misdirected. So I'm not like bummed she won. I knew she was gonna win. I'm thrilled that this elevates her profile because like let's give that bitch some bigger, better roles.
Yeah.
And
I'm gonna interject one more time. Just because this is a story that I think is worth sharing in reference to her. A friend of mine a couple of years ago, like not even that long ago, it was within the last 2 years, was sitting at Blockheads, and Lindsay Mendez was
there. The one on 50th?
Probably.
Most likely.
Lindsay Mendez was also there, supposedly sitting with her agent, and her agent, my friend, overheard the conversation they were having, and the agent was literally saying words on the realm of, Broadway just doesn't know what to do with you, and it just doesn't. It's a hairy place for you to be. And, you know, within those next 2 years, she won a Tony.
Yeah.
So once again, just proving none of this has any rhyme or reason at all.
No, it's very random. And remember, I remember when it was announced she was taking over for Betsy Wolf. Because she wasn't even the original choice for Carrie. She replaced Betsy Wolf. And I was so thrilled with the prospect of that. And I still am. To be perfectly honest, I would just love to direct Lindsay Mendez how I see her playing Carrie. I think that there's an even greater Carrie within her than what Jack O'Brien got out of her. I think that she's so... Like, if you saw Significant Other, bitch is an actress with a capital A.
It was Bartlett Scheer.
No, it was Jack O'Brien. Bartlett Scheer did My Fair Lady.
Jesus Christ, John. No. Don't do drugs.
Bartlett Scheer would have given a more subdued
yes, I'm sorry.
Carry from her.
Why did I ever even try to correct you?
Why would you even
start that? I'm not the brains of this. What am I thinking?
You've got brains. It's just fried. It's just fried.
So fried.
You puked them all out. That's all. I love her. I saw her in Significant Other. I saw her in... what else did I see her in? Not 35mm, but Dogfight. She was great in Dogfight.
Yeah, she's
a great actress. She's a great singing actress. She's one of the best we got right now.
She is.
I will put it this way. I'm grateful when she eventually leaves Carousel with that Tony and the prominence that Tony's now given her profile.
Yep.
And see what Broadway does for her now.
Yep.
Because they need to do something for her now.
Right, exactly.
I love John Tiffany's speech to his boyfriend.
Yeah.
You know, saying happy birthday.
Oh my God, that was so awkward.
Wasn't it?
Not for any bad reasons. It's just, it's a very sweet gesture. Very sweet gesture. But it was delightfully awkward in my opinion.
I was so, in the theater, everyone was just, when he said it's my boyfriend's birthday, would you all sing? Everyone like collectively went, aw.
And like, that's the first time that like so many buttholes in the Broadway community have been so tight at the same time. They all literally just went.
I was very moved by it. That was one of the more moving moments of the night for me. I'm trying to think what else. I was also very impressed with Sarah Bareilles and Josh Groban.
Yeah, I thought they did great.
They did a really great job.
The one thing I will say was that it seemed like a very, from watching the telecast, have you gone back and watched it?
I watched some of the performances.
Yeah.
Because someone emailed me the next day and said, you know, my viewing party was debating how much of Once on This Island was actually done at Radio City because they thought maybe some of it was pre-taped. And I went back and watched it. I was like, no, that's 100% what they did in the theater.
Cool. Because I was wondering that too. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it was 100% in the theater.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I rewatched the performances to make sure that like it came across the way it felt in the theater.
Yeah. If there's one thing that it did seem a little bit to me is just that watching the award show, the audience at Radio City seemed very kind of uptight isn't the word. They just didn't seem very happy to be there or happy to support each other. I think maybe I have some other friends who in the past years had gone when James Corden had hosted and all these other things. And from what I heard from those people was that those years people were really eager to cheer and stand up and kind of scream and laugh and all these things, because James Corden during every commercial break was out on stage working and telling jokes and revving the audience up. And if there's one thing that it felt like, it just felt like the audience was just sitting there. And I could see Josh Groban and Sarah Bareilles maybe not being the two people to rev an audience up.
They definitely were.
Especially on those breaks.
Being in the audience, so there's an hour before the show where we have to sit there and watch them do a bunch of random awards.
And they did not show a lot of awards that I thought they were going to.
Well, something that actually made me giggle was the fact that Mrs. Moses, I don't know how to say his name, Bands Visits Librettist, got his Tony Award on TV only because everyone thought it was going to be Tina Fey. And they wanted, they put it on air in hopes of seeing what kind of speech she gave. And when she didn't win, he got to give his award.
I didn't realize that was why.
Absolutely.
I found that kind of interesting.
It's because she had won the Drama Desk in the Outer Critics Circle, and most people assumed she was going to win.
Yeah.
Because, like, Mean Girls is a fun show. I would not say it's exceptional. I wouldn't even personally say the book is exceptional, but it's fine. It's funny. It does its job for the most part. It's good enough that if she were to win, you wouldn't be like...
Right. Like, what the fuck is
you'd be sort of like, sure, whatever. And she's Tina fucking Fey. If she wants an award, give her the goddamn award.
Give her the goddamn award, you guys.
She's Tina Fey. The vibe in the room was definitely that she was going to win it. And when she didn't, that's the reason why he won. I will say, they didn't rev us up either before or during commercial breaks. The one time they did something was they had the guy from SpongeBob do a demonstration of why sound design was important.
Oh.
So they did this like big film montage of plays and musicals, but they turned off the sound and they had him do weird sound effects to everything. And it was really cool. And like that was the one time the audience was like,
I wonder if you could like watch that anywhere.
I think you can. I think it's available somewhere. Because that was everything else was showing old high school photos of nominees. And
right.
They would do multiple choice of which of these shows is the longest ever on Broadway? A, Cats. B, Chicago. C, Phantom. D, Memphis. And it's
that seems boring.
Yeah, everyone in the audience is like, fuck you. Like,
right.
We all know. Go
right,
away.
Right, exactly.
It was like, don't demean us. I will also say, it was upsetting being in the room every time nominees were announced, because it was so very clear that Mean Girls, SpongeBob, and Harry Potter had a lot of family and friends in the audience, because they were the ones who cheered the most for any nominee that came on, which is fine, support who you want, but then they would stop applauding for other people. So it would, if you were
a little bit of favoritism,
exactly, like if you were a My Fair Lady nominee who came right after a Mean Girls nominee, good luck to you, because
I did notice that. I thought that some of the cheering was just extreme, not in a bad way, but I did notice that. I thought, I kind of was surprised at some of the people who won after the amount of applause that after people would get, because sometimes that's indicative, you know? Interesting. That is very interesting. I'm learning so much today, you guys.
Well, I'm here to teach all the youngins and John.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm young.
I was here at heart. We're both young at heart. No, and it made me mad. And that also translated to the In Memoriam, which made me really mad, because people used to applaud and then that kind of stopped because it came across as really crude.
Yes.
And then because Barbara Cook was the first person they showed, everyone applauded.
Right.
And then it just happened.
Yeah.
And I hate it when people applaud and then don't applaud, because it's implying that certain lives mattered more than others.
Exactly. It is so weird. It's such a weird thing.
I purposely did not applaud until the very end, because I was like, I'm not going to.
No.
I take that back. I purposefully applauded if I heard applause stop for somebody, because I was like, you do not get silence when someone else got 6,000 hands. Like that,
Well, that's so sad.
And it was like
sad.
A producer or a writer or like an actress who dedicated, like, Jan Maxwell is, of course, the most famous person to have had this happen this past year. But there were other people on that screen who were actors who didn't become famous.
Right.
But dedicated their whole lives to Broadway.
Yeah.
Like that. That
so pivotal to this craft. Speaking of emotional things, I completely forgot to mention this, but probably my favorite part of the night was the Seasons of Love with the Parkland students.
Yeah.
I mean, just talk about like being completely caught off guard in a great way, in a super emotional, yes, slightly politically pooled, but I think that we as the Broadway community have to stand up for what we believe in. And I think giving those kids a platform and giving them that kind of gift. I mean, these poor kids have had to go through literal hell. And even just the fact of those kids getting a moment of just sheer awesomeness in their life. And the fucking soloist.
Yeah.
Throwing my shoes at the TV. I was listening and I thought, oh, they're very good. These kids have really rehearsed. This is really impressive. You know, I like this. And then she started singing and I was like, oh, she's great.
Yeah.
Oh, she's great. And I was, oh, some chest voice in the high C. Oh my, like, I just, I.
It's really, not to be shallow, but it is really nice when you support a performance that emotionally means a lot, but then also, technically speaking, is also really
amazing. Yeah, no, completely. Yeah.
Everybody, I think Radio City, as soon as so there was two moments of like a sigh of relief you could hear in the theater. One was when Matthew Morrison was introducing them. He did it in such a weird way, and he worded it so weirdly that for a second you thought that, like, they asked if they could come to Radio City, and he said no.
Yeah.
Like, that's how he was wording it for a second.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
It was like Golden Globes moment.
I didn't know what was going on. And then the way that he talked about himself, that he kind of did that, like, weird glee plug, I was very uncomfortable.
It was like, do you remember at the Golden Globes when James Franco won and, like, brought Tommy Wiseau up with him, and then when Tommy Wiseau went to speak, he went, nope.
No, see, yeah. I didn't see that. I didn't watch the Golden Globes.
It was, I mean, to be fair, you don't want Tommy Wiseau by a mic, but you then just don't bring him up.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah, so it felt like it was going to be that, and then he's like, so we asked them to perform, and everyone, okay. Uh-huh. And then they started to sing, and everybody's sighed again. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, they're good.
Yeah.
And then when she hit that note, I shit you not, there were only two moments where everyone in Radio City collectively stood up at the exact same time. One was when Chita Rivera got her Lifetime Achievement Award.
Everyone should.
Mm-hmm. Like, even Andrew Lloyd Webber, it was kind of...
Yeah.
Everyone eventually did, but it was piecemeal. When Chita came on stage, everyone collectively stood up. And when she hit that high note, everyone collectively went, whoop, like, oh, stood up for her. And for all of them, they were great.
They were all wonderful.
It was a lovely moment.
It was a very lovely moment. I was really proud to be a part of this community in that moment. Mm-hmm.
I was also very proud that Ariel Satchel wore sneakers with his tux, because I also wore sneakers and got a lot of shit about it from my sister. Who, like, I saw the next day, she's like, oh, so you just chose not to wear shoes to the Tony Awards. I'm like, bitch.
Oh, it's called fashion.
It's fashion. They were sparkly and they matched my bow tie.
Exactly.
Yeah. I
haven't
watched her win yet. I would like to see if you can hear me shout from the very distance a little like, oh, when Laurie Metcalf won, because I did want her to win, but I was so certain it wasn't going to happen. So when she did, I very loudly went, oh!
I think a lot of people were surprised, and not in a bad way. I just think a lot of people just thought, oh, you know, she's had her shining moment so recently that maybe... But no, we're on a Laurie Metcalf high, and I don't think we're ever going down now.
And to be fair, if you see Three Tall Women, like, she is exceptional.
Oh, yes. She is a brilliant actress. There's no denying.
Yeah. I was very thrilled she won. And I also love that Glenda Jackson mispronounced Joe Mantello's name.
I know.
She called him John Mantello or Josh Mantello.
I was so happy that she won as well. Seeing someone up on that stage who looked so much like me was just, it felt great to be represented.
Yeah, it's just an honor to not be nominated.
It is. So many things. What are there other things we should cover about the Tonys? I mean, it's...
I'm trying to think. Like, I don't know what people were saying online for the most part. I saw a couple of your things during... I would go during commercial breaks on my phone to see what people had said. My phone also blew up when Robert De Niro came up. Oh, because yeah, I guess
people wanted to know what happened.
Yeah, because I guess they bleeped the...
the whole thing.
Yeah. So I had like 9 different texts because most people knew that I was there.
Yeah.
I had posted a photo and everything. So a couple different people texted me and...
Sorry, excuse me, I just burped. I didn't think I was going to, but I did. Oh, sorry, everybody.
You ruined my moment.
Keep talking about De Niro.
De Niro, but yeah, so basically... Robert De Niro said fuck Trump twice.
Twice.
The first time it was such a surprise that everyone kind of just was like,
yeah.
And then he's like, I'll say it one more time. Fuck Trump. And then everybody cheered. But like everyone around me kind of went, I guess he's going for it.
Yeah, he did. He really did. Yeah. You know, and
proud of him.
I'm normally not one to advocate really harsh.
Advocate.
Advocate.
We got BFAs in musical theater, guys.
I have no idea what I'm talking about ever. I can tell
you about turn words.
I'm not one to support meanness.
I'm a little mean girl.
But you have to hand it to the Tonys for having some balls and saying, yeah, they bleeped it out, but this is the award show, not the Oscars, not the Golden Globes, nothing else. We're finally someone to stop beating around the bush and just...
Said it.
Just said it. You know, it's... No matter, there's on some level you have to hand it to him for that. Was it politically charged in a moment that probably didn't need to be politically charged? Maybe, but it happened.
Yeah, and if you needed a nice like calming down, you had 9,000 minutes of Bruce Springsteen's Dream Journal.
Oh my God, I am confused a lot in life. Like, that's just a thing that happens. There's nary a moment in my day that I'm not utterly confused by everything that is happening around me. It truly is a sheer miracle that I live day to day. I don't know if I've ever been so confused as I was during that Bruce Springsteen cool monologues for tweens monologue that he was just reporting. Like, that was just slowly trickling out of his mouth. I was so confused.
I felt like I was 12 again, looking at a Playboy, because I was thinking to myself, I feel like I'm supposed to like this, but I don't like this.
I just don't like this. This is confusing to me.
Yeah. That entire audience, I mean, it was like everyone was so quiet because we were all just waiting for it to happen. We're like, when's the song going to start?
Yeah.
And then it was, I don't know how long the actual performance was. It felt like 10 hours.
Yeah, no, it literally Angels in America felt about half of that that monologue.
And it felt like 90% of it was a monologue, and then he sang others and then called it a day. And it's like, oh no, it felt like he shat on my face in that way and said it was a facial and called it a facial.
Yeah, it was so perplexing in so many different ways. But all that being said, gives us fuel for the fodder to make fun of it. So
exactly. Like I'm a catty bitch as much as the next person. The people behind me were extra catty, but I won't say their names on air because one of them is a person, but I told John beforehand, a person in the who's prominent in the theater community sat behind me the Tonys and had a lot of opinions.
A lot of opinions.
Like
they were quite interesting to hear about.
Regina George could have taken a lesson from this person.
Mm.
Yeah, and then when I turned around at one, because they said one thing that was like very actually true, and I turned around to acknowledge like that's a true statement. They literally looked at me and go, "Can we help you?"
That like the level of cuntiness involved in that is extremely high.
I really, really wanted to be shallow again and be like, "I'm sitting in the orchestra with you."
Yeah,
clearly I'm not that much of a muggle.
Right.
For all you know, I'm Cameron McIntosh's butt boy.
Exactly.
For all you know,
we're all Cameron McIntosh's butt boy.
He could afford it.
He truly can.
Yes.
On that note,
let's talk more about My Fair Lady.
Yeah. You just saw it right before the Tonys. Oh, the night before.
I did. I was actually 100% joking. I was trying to think of, like, what's the opposite of Cameron McIntosh's butt boy, My Fair Lady? I did see it the night before. It was super lovely. The best thing about it is my friend Kayla works at the merch stand. I didn't know that. So she got me a heavy discount, and I got a Lincoln Center Rodgers and Hammerstein umbrella for $20.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yep. My mom looked at it. She goes, don't use that just anywhere because it is like, it's so like Lincoln Center has done King and I Carousel in South Pacific, so it's all three of their posters sliced up and, like, all over the umbrella. So it's a very colorful umbrella with, like, the show names all around it. So it's, like, it's a garish umbrella that I adore. And she looked at it and she goes, just don't use that. Anyway, I mean, I can go grab it. It's here.
Afterwards. Well, I know that as soon as this podcast is over that I'm looking at a gay-ass umbrella.
It is V-gay. It's Kelly Audra. And I just...
Dreams.
I mean, yeah. But that was the highlight of the evening for me. And it's a lovely production. I'm thrilled Once on This Island won, but
I am as well.
I would have voted for either one, honestly. They both were so beautiful. And Lauren Ambrose, I want to say to all the haters out there that were like, where's Laura Benanti? Where's Betsy Wolf? Where's Philip Sue? I was like, they all could have done a lovely job. Lauren Ambrose did just as lovely a job, and I am thrilled for her.
Yeah.
I hope we get some more musicals with her because she is good.
She is good. I really enjoyed her Tony performance.
Yeah.
I
will say, I listened to her. I was like, I don't hear Fanny Brice anywhere in there in that voice. Unless she was hiding it 100% from what she did for her Funny Girl auditions. But, like, she does not... She belts very rarely in My Fair Lady. Even Henry Higgins, like, it's only half the time is she really using her chest voice.
Yeah.
So I was watching it every now and then going, I really want to know what she was gonna sound like on that score. Because I can't hear it.
Yeah. Just from hearing I Could Have Danced All Night, I obviously cannot hear any bit of Fanny. But Fanny. Doesn't mean she can't do it.
We'll never know, honestly.
I mean, who would have thought that out of all the things that Lindsay Mendez has given us over the last years, that a legit soprano role is what she won her Tony for?
Right?
You know?
After, like, Elphaba?
Elphaba?
After Defeat?
Yeah, honestly. Broadway community full of surprises. Full of it. Full of it!
So full of it. And Tony Shalhoub winning a Tony for actor in a musical in a role that doesn't sing.
Yeah.
Which I'm... Is that the first time that's happened?
I think so.
I think it's not the first time that's a nomination's happened. I think it's the first time someone's won.
Well, you're going to hate me. You are literally going to hate me for this because I'm so dumb when it comes to history. Rex Harrison, the original...
In My Fair Lady?
Yes. Did he not win?
No, he did. But, like,
he doesn't sing.
But he had songs.
Yes, but he doesn't sing.
Okay, if we're going to get technical, if you listen to him in his songs, there are moments where he has, like, a musical moment. So we're talking technically speaking, like... Tony Shalhoub didn't have a song in Band's Visit.
No.
Like, Rex Harrison had...
Songs.
Songs, yes. I mean, again, it was mostly speaking songs, but the same thing with Robert Preston in Music Man. It would be, like, 80% talk, 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 and then a little bit of song.
Yeah.
And I would probably say that's how Rex Harrison did most of his stuff. It would be talk, 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 sing, 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 talk, 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 little note right here.
Gotcha.
Which is, like, fine. I'd rather someone know what their limitations are than try to, you know, go beyond their means.
Yeah, I get that.
Like when a deep alto tries to do a Vita and it's like, girl, no. Like, we have the same vocal range. Don't you try to sing Buenos Aires.
I forgot.
Yeah? It's been a long day, guys.
It has been a long day already.
And this is the first time we've been in the same room.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. I want to say, when John and I were planning this recording session, he texted me this morning and he goes, so where are we going to record? And I shit you not, it's been so long since I've seen this fucker, like, in the flesh, his birthday aside, that for 5 minutes, I was like, I thought to myself, what does he mean by that? I went, oh, of course, we're in the same city now. We are going to be in the same room. I've been so used to just recording into my microphone via Skype. Oh, my God.
You know, I kind of enjoy being Brigadoon and only showing up once every 100 or so years. Just because it just keeps people really guessing. Even last night, I was at an event, and these people were just... It's really quite wonderful if everyone's first response when they see you is they just go, you're back? With a bit of shock in their face. And then I go,
you're still alive?
Yeah, basically, you're still alive? That's most of what I get in life.
It ain't too shabby.
Yeah, no, it's not too shabby. At least people are impressed that I keep surviving. I keep opening the eyes every morn, you know?
he rolls out of bed and that makes sure everything still works.
I do.
Oh, something that Cheetah said in her speech, I don't know if they showed it on air. She's like, all the women in the room, wake up every morning, cross your right leg over your left leg, then cross your left leg over your right leg. If everything still goes smoothly, you're okay.
Oh, then I'm not okay.
She was like, you still have time left.
I am not okay.
It was, oh God.
I'm ready to retire already.
Me too. Just like put me in a wheelchair and call me Nancy.
I would love to already live in one of those like old home for actors. Like, you know, mm-hmm. on Will and Grace,
Sandra.
Yeah. What? How's the character Sandra lived in one of those old acting homes? I mean, Eileen Brennan is one of my favorite actresses anyways. Oh, and so that character is just one of my favorite characters in the whole TV canon. But
she's a great character.
But yeah, I want to live that life. I want to live a life at an actor's retirement home. But I just want to be there.
I want to do an actor's retirement home production of Spring Awakening.
Oh, man.
And the nurses are the adults.
Oh.
Matt, can you imagine like an 85-year-old Venla?
Yes, I can. I would love that.
The mama who bore me like nipple massage would be like down by her waist.
Oh my God. Oh my God. It would be such a dry production. So dry. So dry. Yeah.
All the world that got, I don't know why that got me as much as it did.
Just
but
because
it
made you think about all the dry old people bits that would be jumbling around during my junk or totally fucked.
Yeah. Not since 2012 with Follies has there been such dryness.
Or since Come From Away.
Oh yeah, I guess so.
Come From Away was kind of an experiment in seeing
if
the world will watch people over 50 dance like they're in Spring Awakening or move like they're in a modern rock musical. Very interesting.
Apparently
experiment.
They're still,
apparently they like it.
Yeah.
Do
you have anything on the docket for your next theater viewing?
I want to see SpongeBob. I want to see SpongeBob next. That's kind of the thing that I care about most right now. I really would like to see Carousel, but I've kind of heard so many mixed things about it.
From who?
No one.
Oh, what?
But I've also, the last couple things I've seen have been, like, Angels in America. All these kind of big epic things. I want some fun musical fluff.
Yeah. SpongeBob is totally worth it.
Yeah, I'm really sad. I could have had a ticket next week to see Joshua Harmon's next, or new play, which I've heard is amazing.
With Idina Menzel?
Yes, and I've heard that she's amazing in it. People really have been loving her. And fun fact about me, I met Josh Harmon last night at a roundabout event, and I was super nervous because he is one of my favorite playwrights, and I, you know, in my mind watching his shows, I think, gosh, he and I just have, he shares the same brain, you know, not to say that I'm as smart as him, because I'm not, but we just have very, like, the things that he apparently finds funny, I definitely find funny, and so we started talking, and He was like making a half joke, and I just thought this is my chance to joke with Josh Harmon and to let him know that I am the same, and I stuttered in delivering the joke, and we all just ignored it, and it was so shameful. But then later he was talking about The Bachelorette, and I successfully nailed a joke about The Bachelorette, and that was just a really important moment in my life.
Bravo. Bravo.
Yeah,
bravo.
So that's a little humble brag right there. I was able to rally and collect myself after making a fool of myself in front of Josh Harmon. But I really want to see... Those are kind of the two things I really want to see. And so part of me thinks maybe I will see the Josh Harmon play. I could get a ticket to it this week if I wanted to. But I just want to see... I loved doing A New Brain. Doing A New Brain was one of the best experiences of my theater life. I've just been crying so much for the last couple months that I just want to... I want to see some fluff. I want to see a sponge.
So you don't want to see Three Tall Women? And you don't want to see about ageism and sexism?
I do. I just... Maybe not right now. I have such limited time in this city all the times.
It's true. So. It's true. Catching John is like catching a firefighter. Like, I got it!
Yeah, it's
He's
true.
Here. He's in my hand.
Yeah, or like a really aggressively homosexual Pokemon. Or I guess
like
it's
all
called
Pokemon.
Yeah, yeah.
All Pokemon. Because they're all poking a mon.
Exactly. Jigglypuff. You know.
She's a queer.
Oh my God. She is
LGBTQ.
She is. She honestly should be on Pose, which I just started watching, and I liked that as really? Well. Have you started watching
it? I have not.
I've only watched the first episode.
You are very good about watching the Ryan Murphy stuff. I am not.
Sometimes. I'm very good about starting watching the Ryan Murphy stuff. I'm never good about... I don't know if I've ever finished...
Do you not finish Versace?
I finished Versace. That's okay. The first one I think I've ever finished, actually. I've never finished Glee. I never finished Scream Queens. I never finished...
Scream Queens.
Yeah, actually, I can probably firmly say that the Assassination of Gianni Versace was the first one that I finished. But I feel like I would finish Pose. I really enjoy Pose.
I hear it's very good. I'm interested.
The actresses that they have, these trans actresses are, I would say, some of the best that we've had on TV so far. Really, you know, I've always thought that Laverne Cox was very talented in a lot of different ways. But
These women wipe the floor with her.
These women kind of, they already seem to kind of be wiping the floor with her. So I'm intrigued to see where that can go.
It's about the ballroom circuit, right?
It is, yeah. And Billy Porter kind of plays the MC of this particular ball.
Tens across the board.
And he says that. Yes, in the pilot, he says that.
Why are you gagging? She bring it to every ball?
Hasn't said that yet.
Have you watched Paris is Burning?
Have I watched Paris is Burning?
First of all, Rex Harrison history lesson. I'm allowed to ask these questions because I don't know. You throw curveballs at me.
Fair. I've watched Paris is Burning many times.
Okay,
I find it to be so wonderful. Mm-hmm. A wonderful chunk of gay, queer history. Yes. That was caught on film in a time when very much this scene could have completely gone by completely unnoticed, and really sheds light onto an extremely mind-opening part of sect of society that most people just would never have known existed.
Absolutely.
It's brilliant. I love that documentary. Yeah. I love so many aspects about it. And so I think that's another reason why I really enjoy Pose, because it really bring some light onto that. I will, sorry, this is a tangent going back to theater, so I guess it's applicable. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing Angels in America and not having read it or watched the HBO series in probably like almost a decade, it probably has been a decade since I really spent any of time in that show. It is so fucking powerful to experience that as an older, I don't know if I would even say more well-rounded, but just more experienced, more aware queer person, and especially queer artist. But God, we are not worthy of that play. Mm. It's so brilliant in all the ways. It's so scary how applicable it is to our current state in so many different ways. Yeah, I think it's so easy for us now, especially because of the society we live in, where everything is so instant gratification, instant all of this, to kind of gloss over something like AIDS. You know, if it doesn't, we're very much in a world where if it doesn't affect you directly, a lot of times you kind of ignore it. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely guilty of that. And it was so powerful to be reminded of where another community that obviously we're both very a part of because of who we are from birth, you know, the queer community, just seeing that history enacted on stage and seeing what these people went through 30 years ago, you know, we missed by just a fraction because of fate being a part of, a plague, like a real plague that hit America and specifically our people. And it's understatement of the century, but Angels in America was extremely powerful to me to see it again as an older gay man.
Now, that and The Normal Heart are two plays that both move me tremendously and frighten me to no end.
Yes.
I think sometimes, I always think about a parallel universe where I was born in, say, like 1970
mm-hmm.
and, you know, came to New York like 1718 when right as like the AIDS epidemic was like at, mm-hmm. at its peak and people still didn't truly know how it was contracted. Like, yep. would I have gotten it? Would I have mm-hmm. survived? What would I have done?
That's a big part of Pose too, which, you yeah. know, is a thing that I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Like you watch, if you do watch Paris is Burning, which
please do if you haven't.
Please do it.
I think it's still on Netflix. It has been for years. Absolutely. Yeah.
Is. It's, I mean, it's on, it's just in general, from a technical standpoint, is one of the greatest documentaries ever made.
It is.
Like, as a filmmaker, you would watch it and go, this is how you make a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
It's insightful. It's funny and sad. It's, yep. It moves at the right pace. It's never it boring. Does. That, as you're saying, like, that insight into that time, and like, that time capsule is, it shows you how much we have progressed, how much we have stayed the same.
That one's a crazy one. Yeah. Yeah.
I always say, it's why I always have problems when people rewrite plays from a specific era. The most recent one I can think of is when they redid Gigi and like completely rewrote it because they were saying how they wanted it to appeal to modern audiences, to which I always say, we can't move forward unless we know where we've been.
Yeah.
Gigi is a piece, and I'm not going to go on a Gigi tangent, but it's a piece that was written by Colette, you know, a very feminist woman at a time when feminism was very limited. And so Gigi is an important story of a woman who gets her happy ending on her own terms in the few ways she can.
Mm-hmm.
But modern audiences look at that, they go, well, it's not like that now, so why should we know this? It's like, I feel the same way about Angels in America. It's like, the gay community is not like this now, but we could absolutely be this way again if we forget how far we've come.
Right. We really love to pretend that we do live in a vacuum, even though we definitely don't. I definitely have had those thoughts as well of if I was born in the 70s, if I, you know, all those scary thoughts. This is kind of a really sad thing to bring up, but I remember one of the first things I was raised super religious. I was raised in a home that only talked about being gay in a very negative way, in the way of like, you will contract AIDS, all these kind of things. And so gay history was something I never really latched onto at an earlier age because I just didn't know. And so one of the first times I really heard firsthand from someone who lived through the AIDS epidemic in New York was a college, my freshman college acting teacher. And someone was doing the scene from Angels in America, the Threshold of Revelation scene.
The Pryor Harper one. Scene.
Yeah.
We've been there, honey.
Yeah. It's a very commonly, you know, acting school.
I did it when I was 16 and had no reason to do it.
Well, right.
Other than I just wanted to.
Right. But, The teacher really were asking these kids to try to delve into what it really meant, you know, these 18-year-olds to try to understand what the AIDS epidemic firsthand, what it was like. And so she told this story about how she was here in New York in the 80s, and, you know, it obviously, everyone was so afraid because it was so unknown. No one knew what was going on. And she said that within like a matter of a year, she went from getting engaged and having her whole bridesmaid party being her gay best friends to getting married next year and having she had a bridal party of zero. Everyone passed away because of AIDS and HIV. And she would have to deal, like, she had mentioned this to someone then later, even in New York, and only like a year or two later, you know, that she had lost all these people or had been continually losing all these people. And someone said this phrase, and I don't think I'll ever really get the taste of it out of my mouth, but she said that this person looked at her and said, well, you know, they just can't get rats low and gross enough to fuck each other. So that's why they can't find a cure for AIDS. You know, only gay people are that low and disgusting. And so it's, you know, it's really a completely devastating side of history for our community. And yeah, I really felt honored. And like, we're so lucky to have Angels in America be what it is, so that we can, in a way, never forget and hopefully move forward as society. Although, questionable in these current times.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The two things I will say in regards to us is, know who your allies are. People are always going to not look at the world the exact same way that you do. So if you want to have a conversation with someone who maybe is not 100% where you're at, the most recent example I can think of is RuPaul and his comments about having transgendered or transsexual contestants on the show.
Yeah.
And the whole trans community was like, ah, I was like, this is someone who has lived in a drag world for decades and is now all of a sudden starting to learn that there are other things.
Yes.
Give him a minute.
Yeah.
Because he is an ally.
Give him a minute.
So know who your allies are. And then also, yeah, like never forget, because we can't, you have to kind of have that almost anger behind you to really fight for it.
Yeah, it was crazy the different amount of emotions that it stirred in me. So if you have a chance to see it, if you are in this city, see it. If you are not, pick it up, read it again. If you've never read it, please pick it up, read it, and then watch the HBO miniseries, which I think has a lot of really great moments in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Meryl Streep is in it, so giving unknown actresses a chance.
Exactly.
So brave.
How brave of them.
Yeah. So now that I've successfully taken us on a full-blown AIDS tangent.
So what you were saying to me, John, is we should close out with falsettos.
Yeah, we could close out with falsettos. Who did we close out with last time? Was it Katrina Lenk?
No, last time was Taylor Lautermann.
It was Taylor Lautermann. I feel like we should, because I was had that thought on my way over. I thought that we should give her comeuppance.
And in fact, I'm pretty sure you did say last time, because she's going to win, we'll wait till after she wins to close out with her. So yeah, we'll absolutely close out with Katrina Lenk.
Perfect.
I found out through some internet talking that she was once in Spider-Man.
That was her Broadway debut.
Yeah, she replaced the woman who played Arachne, which was like the spider villain. Part of me wants to like find audio of that and use that to close this out, because it's like so classic Katrina Lenk, ethereal. But no, we'll do her classic.
I saw Katrina Lenk years ago, before she even made her Broadway debut, in South Coast Rep's production of Cloudlands.
Of course you did.
And she was amazing. So I've been a Katrina Lenk fan for years. Well, way before you.
Congrats.
The collective you.
You've been on that train for years. Congrats to you.
I have. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we covered a lot today. We had so much to talk about.
So much. We talked about your birthday. We talked about the Tonys, Muffer Lady. Gay people.
Gays.
Younger, The Good Place.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that, too.
Yeah, that was like 5 hours ago.
It was like 5 hours ago.
Oh, my God.
Well, on that note, on those notes, on those melodies.
Yes, I want to thank everyone for sticking through this one.
Yeah,
I feel like it's been a good one. Like it's she's been long, but she's been a good ride.
Yeah, she's been long, but she promises to please.
Like Michael Fassbender or Angels in America, she's long, but she gives a good ride.
Oh, please. Please. I would love it.
So, yes, this is Broadway Breakdown. I am Matt Koplik.
And I am John Wascavage. And this is Christine... What the hell? Katrina Lenk. I'm going to join LinkedIn. That was a joke I made the other day. Starting a website, LinkedIn. You'll get your request. Oh my God. That nitro cold brew just kicked in. I'm so fucking jittery. And like, I can't even form words.
He's like Judy Garland right now.
I am. The uppers just hit you guys. And I'm always on a downer. So.
Katrina Lenk. What a terrible Judy Garland I just
did. That was really bad.
It was terrible.
All right. Take us away, Katrina. Please.
Bye, Katrina. Bye.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.